But I wouldn't buy like any of the candy.
All the rats.
Rihanna's like, this is so beneath me. Come on. All right, so did everyone receive Michelle's abstract draft? What do you guys think? I thought it was really outstanding. I made a few small revisions, but everything was there. How many words does it come out to? I didn't check the word count.
450.
It's under, so anybody have any changes they'd like to make? People okay with the order of the authors? Yeah, I
The
what? Oh, so you made that change? So I will make that change here. So how you spell?
Yeah.
And I just go by Jeff, although my formal first name is Jeffrey. I just go by Jeff. So. Yeah. No, I think that's fine. It's fine. I think she would appreciate that. She's, you know, involved in the project at large, maybe not specifically what we're doing, but she's involved. So I know some people don't like so many names. But, you know, that was last year. Maybe this year things have changed.
People have moved on.
What? Huh? You be. She knows I'm just kidding around. So anyway, I vote for submitting this. Everybody, all in favor? Opposed? Oh, okay. Well. You want to read it now and see what you think? You're one of the senior members of this team, so I respect your opinion. Not that I don't respect the opinion of the less senior members of the team. Where did you find McFadden? Okay, so that was one of Alita's references. All right. Very good. So let's move on. And if you have anything, Brianna, just let me know. Okay. We have the... Let's see. Oh, Tinolo. So she's become masculine. I did not catch that. I'm usually pretty good about that. Yeah, I usually catch stuff like that, but I did not. Unless, did you change your name, Tino? Okay. All right, so let's move on to the Cut Down Master. So we've got this. That's the final draft, right?
That's not the right one.
That's not it?
That's coding. The other one is.
Oh, right. Repeating Ideas Master. Correct?
Yes.
And then we have this one.
Okay, so I was looking at Eric's favorite book.
Speaking of repeating ideas.
I need to get you in the habit of repeating. So, you know, the question becomes, how many repeating ideas should we have? And Auerbach and Silverstein suggest in the neighborhood of 60, with a minimum of 40 and a maximum of 80. So how many repeating ideas did you end up with, Michelle? Do you know? Okay.
I didn't count, but I would guess closer to 30. Maybe, could be 40, because there are a lot of little ones at the end.
And I'm also sort of getting more of a repeating idea, self-repeating idea. Yeah.
Okay, so you found some sub-repeating ideas.
Yeah, like I was starting off making a broader repeating idea with a female character. Engages
in household chores, for example, and then it would be sort of categorized by person, like would be, you know, child and mother, or the grandmother, or, yeah, another example, but I noticed something like certain family, something like that. So, you didn't think about maybe separating it into its own repeating ideas, the idea?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was related enough to include it in the...
It was like separate but captured under perhaps a larger umbrella.
I mean, this is where deviation from the Auerbach and Silverstein model is fairly evident in what we're doing. Because it's... these aren't hour-long conversations. These are very
right.
Short, repeated vignettes.
Right.
Only so much can. I mean, in reality, it's only five stories over and over and over again. So, I mean, I would expect significantly there would be less than 80 on the high end, and, you know, not at all have been surprised with less than the low end,
mm-hmm.
just based on how small the material is.
Yeah, I'm not saying you guys should have more. I'm just telling you what the norm is and what the extremes are in Auerbach and Silverstein to just give us a benchmark for how we should think about what we're doing. So on page 60, Auerbach and Silverstein write, how many repeating ideas should you come up with? There are no hard and fast rules, but we have found that something in the neighborhood of 60 is a workable number with a minimum of 40 and a maximum of 80. The number that you actually come up with will depend on your cognitive style. If you tend to see fine distinctions everywhere, then your list will probably be large and you will have to reduce it. If you tend to think in broad patterns and see things as similar, then your list will probably be smaller and you will have to expand it. Again, try for about 60 ideas with the understanding that you can go back and revise if it becomes necessary in later steps. Okay, that's fine. So then, I mean, we're going to talk about the repeating ideas, but I just want to foreshadow the themes. How many themes should you have? This is on page 65. Although there is no hard and fast rule, we suggest reducing the number of repeating ideas by a factor of 3 or 4, resulting in from 10 to 20 themes with an average of 15. So if you had... let's say 32 repeating ideas, we should probably have about 10 themes. Right?
Yeah. Which brings me to an issue that we had.
Yes. Let's hear it.
I feel like Deb did something different than Melissa and Rose.
By the way, Rose can't be here. She contacted me. She has pink eye, and she's
at the
hospital right now. So
thank you for not coming. thank you for not coming when you have pink eye. I stand by that.
Okay, I think, Rose, what they're trying to say is they're happy you didn't come today. I don't know why. I'm sad, but...
No, we hope you feel better soon.
There you go. Feel better soon. Thank you. All right. Go ahead, Eric.
I would not trade a pink eye sick day. I feel like we have kind of done it in such... Dev did it in such a way that was very concrete, which was like, Mom does this.
Wait, the actual title of the repeating idea?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, Mom picks up the cup, Mom gives more juice, things like that. And Melissa and Rose did more like, more that kind of lean towards themes.
Give me an example.
The mom disciplines the children. Now that could be verbally or physically.
But Deb wants to defend herself. Yes, Deb.
Oh, no. I'm not saying that she's
no.
Not.
No. The other coding team that I've been on, I was asked to specifically try to even use the participants' words for the repeating.
That's correct.
And that's the only reason why I did it.
Now, you don't have to, but you can, and it's kind of encouraged, but you don't have to.
I had a feeling that Deb was closer to... You know, I had a feeling that Rose and Melissa consolidated more in that case. However, Deb was outvoted, so I 2-1 as far as that goes. So I kind of worked Deb's, you know, just used things that Deb's that didn't fit under another category that was already there. So we kind of have themes, it feels like, already. If that makes sense?
Well, how many repeating ideas do you have? You can just count them up quickly. I just got these and I was working on something right before I came here, so I wasn't able to review them myself. Okay, so 32 and 42, that sounds fine.
But they are more generalized ideas, and so then...
But it, when you go to, when you move to, sorry to interrupt, but when you move to the more broad category of theme, you know, we're going to be combining.
Yeah, most of the time they change one another.
That's okay, that's all
but
right.
But how do you combine? Mom does the chores, Dad does the chores.
Okay.
You know? But it's also the children being the chores. So the problem is, everything contradicts everything in here, and everything is, you know, which was kind of something I had thought early on, because there's so much, you know, we've seen so many different things that everything has been covered, essentially, in every direction. So it's difficult to consolidate, because... In some cases, it's the parents who do the chores. In some cases, it's the children who do the chores. In some cases, it's the females. I don't know if they're specifically the males, but even so everyone, you know, then the theme is, like, people, males don't exclusively do the chores.
No, I know. I don't know how many people read this book. I read the book. And they do a nice job of talking about two studies that they actually conducted using their method. One study consisted of interviewing Haitian fathers, fathers who had been born in Haiti but grew up here. And the other group were a group of promise keeper fathers. Promise keepers are members of an evangelical Christian faith who meet together once a week, and they talked also about their fathering experiences. And what they learned, well, I'll just refer to the Haitian father study. What they learned is that, you know, the fathers seem to identify with their father's method of discipline and hierarchy in the family. But at the same time, they also... wanted to be fathers who were much more affectionate and egalitarian in their relationships with their children. So how do you reconcile this contradiction? They came up with a label which they called bicultural role strain. So that the conflict was actually within each father, and that the father then had to straddle these two cultures, the traditional Haitian culture, which is very hierarchical, fathers don't have much interaction with their kids, and then the more conventional American way of or style of parenting, which these fathers were now living in this culture and environment, and they saw some of the benefits of being more affectionate with their kids and really enjoying the fathering role more than maybe perhaps their fathers did. So they just created this term called bicultural role strain to encompass the disparate attitudes that these fathers expressed in the interviews. Now, if we could find a way to derive a similar kind of all-encompassing label for these somewhat contradictory perceptions of these kids, then we'll be doing sort of what Auerbach and Silverstein did. Reactions?
My reaction is that, you know, you're taking conflicted issues from someone who, you know, in a conversation in a focus group is expressing conflicted issues.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking separate documents that have shown that sometimes one person does it this way, sometimes there's not conflict, there's just all the ways have been covered.
We don't know if there's conflict or not.
But we'll never know.
Well, when you go back to the specific relevant text that's been cited for each repeating idea, and you see who said what. And maybe one kid said the children do the chores in one story, and then the adults do the chores in a different story. Melissa?
I just have a question. I had a question. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm
okay. All right. What about the other team? What kinds of experiences did you guys have? Similar experiences, different experiences?
Well, just on the amount of repeating relevant texts that are in a repeating idea, is that any way interpreted like that? The I'm just wondering if like the majority of the time, the majority of the respondents find that females do the chores. However, in these rare cases,
yeah, you can. If you feel as though there's really not a strain or not a conflict or there's no ambivalence, but rather maybe most families are perceived as the father scaring the monster away and not other members, but in a small minority of cases, the mothers scare the monster away. You could actually write up your theoretical narrative giving voice to both the majority voice and the minority voice when you write up, if you don't really truly think that these kids actually feel conflicted about who's going to scare away the monster. Aaron.
I agree. I think in those cases also you can go back and look at some of those stories. There's some cases where the mom trapped the monster, like it was the mom that done everything in that story, or like the dad cleaned it, so well, the dad had also kind of been involved in everything else, so maybe mm-hmm. that could also be put in that kind of description, mm-hmm. saying that, you know, the majority of the mom is this household could have been this same parent kind of did everything. In the
right, like, for example, now that we've gone through this one time, all the relevant text and categorized them into our repeating ideas, you know, is there a repeating idea that typically the father is the one who scares the monster away? Is that, can we say that that's typically? Okay.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was wondering. Is it something you might say that this typically happens, even though there is a repeating idea that the mom scared of the monster, but maybe there's only two respondents
right.
who said that.
Right. So, I mean, that's almost qualifies as orphan text. you know, if you have two people out of 51, you know. Similarly, you know, who tended, was there a clear trend in which parent treated or responded to the hurt knee? If so, what was it? Mom. Okay, so it was split for you guys?
Okay.
Because, I mean, if that were, let's say that were the case, then we could generate the hypothesis that whereas in experiences of injury, mothers are perceived as being the caregivers, in experiences of fear and protection, fathers are perceived as being the caregiver. You know, that could be a sentence in the theoretical narrative that would make sense, but it sounds as though that might not be true.
I know that's interesting, you have those two stories, and for the monster, the mentor, basically, dad comes to the rescue, and then for the first being, it's more of a mom comes to the rescue, and how the perception of being rescuer is very contextual.
Right, that's the kind of, yeah, but that's exactly the kind of conclusion that I'd want to draw. Like, when we write up a theoretical narrative, could we say something like that? With some exceptions. Now, it sounds as though Eric's team was more split on how the focus on injury would be treated. Right, or who was doing the treating.
I mean, there were other things that I didn't see that, like, I noticed that only the dad would transport the child or which is kind of the exact opposite. Like, I've heard, you know, like, they would say, like, the child is picked up by the mom and transported to them. So I feel like maybe we're moving on different
Well, Michelle, you actually saw all your teammates' responses. So, was it more split, or was Brianna's generalizations more supportive? Okay, now. At some point, you had said, maybe it was last week, one of you had said to me that you had been, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, one of you had said that you've been getting mostly girls or boys, I can't remember which. You'd done mostly girls. Did you notice a gender?
But I will say, as far as transport goes, it's two people had a lot of transport, and four people had the dad transport. So both men, two males had the mom transport, and three males had the dad, and one female had the dad. So nothing that I could. It's mostly males that had any one transport. So
what was the norm then? The kid would not be transported anywhere. He'd be treated on the spot.
On the spot, yeah. As opposed to taking him to the hospital.
And who was doing the treating on the spot?
Mostly, not the same. Yeah, not the same.
The same split.
Yeah.
That on the spot, half the respondents said mom was taking care of it, the other half said that father was taking care of it.
Yeah. Yeah, about half.
Now, among those respondents, what was, it's more like a chi-square. I got the chi-square in my head. Let me just
two of you headstands. You read it now. Have you gone over class and read it?
No, I haven't received it, so I don't know why that's asking.
All right, so... So basically, chi-square analyses don't talk about quantitative, and it really shouldn't be. Auerbach and Silverstein would not like this, but it's how I think generally. And it might be relevant to what we're doing. You know, in their studies, they looked at fathers. They didn't look at mothers. In our study, we're looking at boys and girls. We're mixing them. And that might be a mistake. I don't know. Fortunately, when I asked you guys to pull out relevant text, I showed you to, I told you to identify or label each relevant text with M or F indicating boy or girl. So we have that information. It's not like we have to go back and reinvent the wheel. We have that information already in our documents. But just let's think about this, okay? I'm thinking this through with you guys. I haven't thought it through clearly, but based on what I'm hearing, we might be able to generate some hypotheses just thinking. So we have boys and we have girls. We have fathers and we have mothers. Alright. So you have boy, let's say these are the children. Right? Female and male, and these are the parents. Female, well, father and mother. Okay. So these are perceptions. They are representations. These are not, they don't exist in reality, right? These are part of stories. These people really do exist. The children actually exist. I actually met them. I said hello to them. I interviewed them. So these are the representations that the children have in their minds. Now, the female children might think that the father comes and takes care of the injury. We have a certain number there of female children who think that the father comes. Huh? You're saying what would be expected?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be exactly 13. You have girl children who might think the mother is more likely to come and rescue during an injury, right? Then you have the boys. The boys might think that the father is more likely to come and rescue, and some boys might think the mother is more likely to come and rescue. Now, as Brianna pointed out, if there were no relationships between these two variables, child variable and caregiver variable, right? Why is it a variable? Because there's more than one level. There's either father or a female or male, there's either father or mother. So it varies, so it's a variable. So, if there's no association between these two variables, you would expect that the number of kids in each of these cells would be roughly the same. But if there is an association between these two variables, we might see, for example, that female kids tend to think that fathers are more likely to rescue them. And male children might think that mothers are more likely to rescue them. Or vice versa. Or, you know, think about various associations that you can test. So the question is whether we might be seeing, we might be able to tease out some kind of relationship. And I just drew a chi-square for the story number two. But there could be a chi-square for story number three. The monster bedroom story. That's different from this chi-square. Or the departure story, you know, where grandmother does all the household chores. Or maybe Naka does all the household chores, or Seika. But that might be gender coded as well. Maybe the female children do
girls see it differently from the boys. Now, we haven't coded the data thinking about gender differences, but we've been sort of talking about it all along, but I'm wondering whether maybe we should do more with the information that we have regarding the gender of the subjects themselves. I don't know, open it up to discussion.
Well, that's a good idea. And
then it goes like still about the same. I think it'd be closer to that 12.75.
So you don't think there'd be any significant associations?
As far as what I have in front of me for story two, I don't think if we were to do a quantitative study, it wouldn't be, there'd be nothing significant.
There'd be a non-significant chi-square.
Yes.
And you guys have often checking the subject of the participant to the parent they chose to represent and trying to see if there was some sort of association that stood out to me, and I wasn't finding. I mean, then again, I was thinking about many different things at once, but nothing was glaring to me.
What about you, Michelle? You have the grand picture in front of you for your team. But you did seem to think that there was a tendency among all kids, regardless of gender, that mothers were more likely to aid in the injury and fathers are more likely to aid in the protection. Story stem.
Father
for a story book, and
it was always mom to clean, and there was one story, so I wasn't really the idea of the father.
The spilled juice,
Yeah.
You said mother to clean, but I assume that's what you meant. Yeah. So in your stories, the mother was much more likely to clean.
She was the only one.
How about in your stories? Well, how about the child?
Not many, though.
What about the child himself or herself cleaning? What's that?
The
father did it once.
Yeah, I don't think the father ever beat the child for spilling the juice.
No, we're talking about cleaning up the juice.
I understand, but I'm just saying that that's one thing that, and cleaning up the juice, I don't think the father did either. I think that aspect is the only place where I feel like there were, in the spilled juice story,
mm-hmm.
where you could say there is definitive differences. And that's in actual, like, roles around the house. In mm-hmm. protection and helping, I don't see anything.
Well, you know, actually, one conclusion that we might draw then is that, contrary to what we had thought, the roles constructed by these kids are much more egalitarian than we ever thought that they would be. That fathers and mothers are equally capable of being caregivers, of being protectors, of...
Without the background data... There's so many confounding variables. I don't know which of these kids actually have a father.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like, when you're doing, I guess, qualitative work, you typically will go back and you ask them
mm-hmm.
more things, and we don't have that opportunity yet.
Right. Well, what we do have is Ugandans who are adults who spend time with children, and we could certainly go back, and I have every intention of going back to Julius once we get farther along in the process and asking him to verify or dispute, you know, the categories that we, you know, the theoretical constructs that we ultimately construct. But, you know, I hear what you're saying, but you don't think that it's helpful information to say that parents, both parents, do both?
Well, because here we're dealing with this manipulation of, we're not, you know, we've created a situation with two parents who are there. You know, we haven't actually asked the question, which you would an hour back in Silverstein, who would help you? If you were to get hurt, who would help you? You know?
And we don't know that
you know, you may say, Mom helps me, but as opposed to, you know, oh, Dad happens to be here. He's never actually here. I'm going to have him help me. You know, and then there's a difference between reality and the wish, I suppose.
Well, we're only posing the question about perception. What are these children's perceptions of who's there for them? What kind of roles do people have in their families? And if they don't have a father, we would expect the mothers to be the ones they would perceive to be helping, both as caregivers and as protectors. I'm really not so interested in reality. I'm more interested in how they construct their reality. That's what I'm interested in. And that's more of a psychodynamic approach to doing the data analysis. What reality is doesn't impact the goals of the study.
But what reality is affects their perception.
And
some of them may be perceiving based on reality, and some of them may be perceiving that, you know, Dad's not always around. Or Mom may not always be around. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't... We've created such a constrained, you know, an artificial situation that, you know, it's hard to really know what the perception is. I mean, can we say that in this case, because, you know, especially without overwhelming data, which we don't have, I don't think.
What do you mean overwhelming data?
Like in one direction.
I think that speaks to the possibility that they view their parents as equally capable of carrying out these roles of caregiver, of protector, of whatever, cleaner-upper. You know, that violates my expectation, but I'm okay with that. We're just generating hypotheses at this point. There's really no research that identifies Ugandan children's perceptions of social roles. It doesn't exist. That's why we're doing hypothesis generating. So I can't test hypotheses. I have anecdotal evidence in my head, but I could be wrong. This is what I thought I would expect to see, that mothers would be more likely to be the caregivers and the housekeepers and whatever, and the fathers would be more likely to be the protectors. And that seems to be how I remembered actually conducting the assessments. Of course, that was 4 years ago, and I might have allowed my anecdotal evidence to be clouded by my expectation. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it sounds like what you're telling me is that mothers and fathers are perceived by these children equally as being capable of performing the roles of caregiver and protector.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. We can write it up like that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my thought is, if I don't really have a father in the home, when the monster's in my bed, I call for Mom.
Okay, that's fine. So then, in your mind, you've constructed a family constellation in which the mother comes when you need to be protected. Okay.
I think that doesn't speak to gender role, though. That speaks to availability. Okay.
Well, did you, when you sent out the master list, did you send it out to the other team as well?
No,
or just
for...
Okay. So I will send out the lists, the two lists to everybody. All right, I'll do that later this evening. But again, I mean, your point, I don't agree. I don't know that availability matters. What matters to me is how these children construct their reality. And if they feel that a mother is more likely to care for them because the mother's there and the father's not, okay. That's how they're constructing their reality. And I want to know what their reality is. Their personal, subjective reality. That's what it is. Now, maybe they constructed it that way because they don't have a father. Okay. But that's how they're constructing it. And when they grow up,
they're going to view women as being there for them and men as not being there for them. And it might be related to the fact that they didn't have a father in lives, or it might be related to the fact that their fathers mistreated them and abused them. That's not the question I'm asking. Why they have constructed their reality that way. I just want to know what their reality is, not why they constructed it. That's just where I'm coming from. And that's the research question that we identified at the beginning when we first started this, that we were asking. Not, we weren't asking why they're constructing their social roles the way they do. For to do that kind of a research study, I think you'd need some quantitative data, which we don't have. We're just posing some very broad general research question that these data might be able to help us answer, maybe not. I don't know. So let me... Okay. So I've got that. So what are some what's the next step we should take here? You have, Michelle's team has 32 repeating ideas. Eric's team has 42 repeating ideas. Obviously, there's going to be some overlap among those repeating ideas. So why don't we... I'm going to pass around the two master lists to everybody. And why don't we have everybody try to synthesize the two lists into one master list. Does that make sense? Should that be the next step that we take? So we're working from one master list.
So everyone makes their own master list?
Yeah. I guess, and then the two team leaders can look at the three different master lists each, and well, finesse it.
Okay.
Does that make sense? I think it's going to be less work than last week. That's my sense. A lot less, actually. Are people following me? Yeah.
Take the two master lists, combine them into one. Yeah, he's going to email out both. You two combine those two, and then I'll look and decide.
And Rose will also be part of that.
Yeah.
You got that, Rose? If you have any questions, email me. And Michelle's team will do the same thing with the two lists. So
we can massage Michelle and, or somebody
right, so the,
combined.
Exactly. I think Valita and I will probably do that.
Okay.
Yeah. But get it to me, you know, like by Monday night, something like that, so that Valita and I have time.
You can get it to me by Sunday night.
Is that all right? I mean, wouldn't you agree this is a much easier task than what you guys just went through last week? I would think so. So I appreciate the time you guys took in doing last week's. I knew that was going to be the rough hurdle, the roughest hurdle. So if we do this, then we'll have a... I'll send you all a Grandmaster Flash of repeating ideas. And then starting the following week, which is the 24th, you will send your team leaders themes. Okay, so we're going to take the repeating ideas and we're going to combine them into, let's say, roughly 10 themes.
Are there repeating ideas that then could be eliminated?
There could be orphan repeating ideas, sure. Deb? Yes. But then we're going to come together then and review our themes. Yeah. We're not doing everything individually. We're going to come together and we're going to talk about the themes and see where they're different and the same. Doing themes together, totally together, as a group? Would you prefer that?
Yeah. I think that'd be good if we have everything to where we're expected to for next week.
Yeah.
Then next week, within the meeting, we could spend an hour, I think, coming up, you know, and debating and arguing about 10 themes.
Think we can do it in an hour? How long did it take you guys in your team?
Well, to go from repeating ideas to themes. So, I mean, if you like the idea of doing it as a group rather than individually, we could spend two Wednesday nights doing it. That would be 2.5 hours. Would that be enough? So let's say, so that would be the 17th and the 24th. So by the end of the 24th, we have a list of themes. And then when you went to theoretical constructs, you also did that in a group?
No, the researchers
did that. Oh, really?
Well, we're all researchers.
That's our dissertation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. So maybe on the 1st... May 1st, we can come together and derive constructs, theoretical constructs from the themes. And based on what I read, I mean, Auerbach and Silverstein don't actually come out and say, we recommend so many constructs, but in their two studies that they cite, they derive 4 theoretical constructs for each study. Now, because we're starting out with fewer repeating ideas, probably we'll have fewer theoretical constructs than 4, but that's just a guess. Yeah.
Just popping in my head, I'm wondering if we're all on the same page about repeating ideas. Like, I've struggled with even making certain repeating ideas. Like, so for example, something I saw that's also on the screen was the child associating with the same sex parent, and I kind of made that as a repeating idea.
Mm-hmm.
Then I also noticed that within the story 5, that there was a child grieving the same-sex parent. So it was like, is that a separate repeating idea, or is that subsumed under the repeating idea of the child parent of the same-sex parent, or is this different because it's contextual and it's a grieving scenario, so maybe that's different? I don't know.
You technically went above and beyond, I think, because I think we were saying that, you know, while we looked at that child squared, it's not... But, you know, we weren't organizing by which child associate, you know, the gender of the child. It's there if we wanted to look at it, but it wasn't something that...
Right, that's...
I mean the story, I don't mean the subject. I mean, like, Sacred goes to father, Naga goes to father, and there is a repeating idea of pairing of same-sex child and...
Then I think the greeting would fall into the same category, yeah.
But then I noticed, like, in the greeting that in what appeared to be almost split to me, situations in which it was the opposite, like, not a little great dad and say a little great mom. Like, there's something about the greeting situation, is this a whole repeating idea?
See, for us, I think we had the greetings were same sex, for the most part.
Yeah, but then I noticed, I don't know if I'm remembering this correctly, some of the stories where they would just switch, like, the, you know, they would go greet the parents, and then they would switch and greet the other parents, but,
yeah.
But who greeted whom first? There might be some kind of hierarchy that we can identify here. But by doing that, we might be obscuring some important ritual here. Maybe the implicit rule in the society is that same-gendered children greet the same-gender parent first, and then... Second, they greet the opposite gendered parent. That could be an interesting rule that we're picking up, like an implicit social rule.
Yeah, I'm wondering if then it would, I mean, I don't know if this is allowed in the research method, go through it a second time.
Absolutely.
I think I input as, I mean, I worked on it for 7 hours, and I think I could have put more effort into, like,
well,
all
right, let me propose this. Having had this discussion now, we're almost out of time. Do people want to just take another week on the repeating ideas and reshuffle?
I wonder if there's a way, maybe you could look at Deb's then?
Well, I mean,
and
I
then see
general
if there's
idea.
Not to learn, but and see if there's anything that you felt needs to be,
like we could use dads as the base for it, as opposed to...
Right, and breaking it down more, into more descriptive.
Yeah. And see, and then compare it with your descript, you know, your more general descriptors, and see if there's anything that needs to be parsed out, and to add to dads as our master for this level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
It's a little bit of a manipulation.
That's what I was wondering about.
Now, you know, in Auerbach and Silverstein, there really isn't this idea of independent raters.
Okay.
It really doesn't exist in this methodology. So, you know, if I were wearing my quantitative research hat, I'd say, what the hell are you talking about, Melissa?
Wrong.
But I can't say that because this methodology doesn't really require that kind of independence of ratings. So if you wanted to do that, if you feel that that would be just as good as just doing reshuffling on your own, sure. Sounds like you like Debs better than, just in general, better than the other two.
I felt like Debs were more on this level of, like, mom picks up the of literally repeating ideas. I felt like Melissa and Rose both lean toward themes. However, two people did it that way, so I learned.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
The majority.
How many repeating ideas did Deb have?
41.
And you
we had
42
all in, yeah. So not that much
right.
Different. Just different, I guess, language, although I'm sure things were mishandled.
All right, so maybe Melissa and Rose can review Debs?
Yeah, maybe that's step one. Melissa and Rose will review Debs and see if there are any repeating ideas in their own that they could be made more specific and incorporated that Deb didn't hit.
I felt like I could have created more. That's why I thought that you were requesting for a little bit more time.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could probably have done more.
What kind of ideas do you think you weren't able to identify because you didn't have enough time?
I felt rushed. I just
and maybe separating out by sex a little more.
Yeah, but I didn't get to.
Right. Well, you know, I'm suggesting if you guys want to take another week just to work on the repeating ideas, I'm okay with that. What do you think?
I mean, I think it's the most critical step.
I agree.
Yeah, I felt really good with it, and I just took like a long time to kind of go through the document and like try to figure out what went with which theme and I mean with which idea, and I just thought it on.
Even that slip is proof enough that there were some issues.
No, I think I was with like themes more than ideas too.
Definitely. Yeah, because I think the repeating ideas are what the exactly did. Like mom picks up the cup, mom gives more juice, and then we combine those into, you know, once we have all those, we can then combine them more easily into
particular
themes.
Well, yeah, I mean, Deb used actual quotes, which is what Auerbach and Silverstein actually recommend.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I just went through mine. I have 35, so I have fewer than you. But I noticed a lot of mine are things like, the child instead of the son or the daughter, so it probably could be split up that way a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But in regards to quotes, I just used the whole entire relevant text under the repeating idea.
No, but the repeating idea was still like
an actual quote for the
mom.
I guess I didn't think
the mom speaks to the children about a problem.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there could be multiple problems under that headline. You know, I think the way the letter of the book that I read twice was that, you know, each problem is its own repeating idea. Like, mix up the juice, mops the floor, you know, as opposed to doing chores.
I guess what it's separated, though.
We tighten up chores into
a theme.
Cooking, yeah, chores are more a theme into both cooking and
mopping the floor are both kind of chores. Washing utensils, also a chore. But I think for repeating ideas, they're all separate things.
Yeah, I see that. I guess one of the things I was wondering, though, is I guess I'm struggling with the issue of a social role. Like, mom picking up a cup on the floor. Is that a social role?
Sure.
Not yet. I mean, but once we incorporate it into a theme, I think, of mom is...
It's evidence for a social role.
Yeah. If it was... Yeah. Mom is the one who cleaned.
You know, we're just classifying different pieces of evidence here, and we're building on something. We don't quite know what it is yet. Deb?
I remember when I was training for this, one of the dissertations said that if the two or more participants said something, even if it didn't seem like part of the question, just to put it in anyway, and then it could possibly go into a field later.
It could be orphan text.
So I do have some ideas in there that didn't necessarily. It didn't seem like right off the bat, so
yeah.
Like family members meet together. Like, I didn't.
Yeah,
Why wouldn't that be?
Why wouldn't that count?
I don't know.
I mean, co-sleeping could be a social role within the family, right?
Well, yeah, when you
have one hard to sleep apart when you have one room. That's a situation where reality affects perception.
Right, but it's ultimately the perception of the child. That's what I'm interested in. Yes, reality might affect it, but it's ultimately the perception of the child. That's what we're answering.
But the perception only exists because, I mean, it's not like any of them live in, like, a triplex where mom and dad have...
That's right, that's true.
Maybe on the TV, you could see that people have some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they do have books that might have people with
Maybe. Well, do you know how many repeating ideas you had, Brianna? So roughly the same? Okay. I think just given what we've learned from this conversation that we've had together, we go back to the relevant text and we do some reshuffling or renaming of categories of repeating ideas, or, you know, just review our work.
It shouldn't take much. You can use yours. You still can use yours as a guide.
A lot of time to go through all of them again. And I'm editing with the word. It's going to help me through the way that it was lined up before, because it was all of my sort of one, two, three, four, and I can see, like, okay, sort of one, I knew what to expect from that. And now they're all over. I was, you didn't need that. No, it is, but now they're in, like, this larger subheading that I created, and I'm going to lose this one. So now they're kind of all over the place rather than sort of one. So I feel like it's going to be hard. And then remap it and then break it down to cut.
Well, if you wanted to go back to your original document that Michelle had sent you, you could do that, I guess. That would seem to take a little bit more effort. It'd be like redoing the homework assignment. I don't want you to redo it so much as review. Okay, let's see. So much as reviewing and tweaking.
It just feels like we did a step and a half, maybe.
Well, I think what you did was necessary, but I think maybe a week of reviewing what you did would be helpful. It sounds.
No, not to say that it was unnecessary. I think we took it slightly too far in this week by turning them kind of into themes, but it was really
supposed
to be more simple,
right.
As Deb did in this case, which was literally what happened, not what it means.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there is some interpretation in the titles that I have.
Well, and Auerbach and Silverstein say that your repeating ideas don't have to be quotes. They encourage it. They suggest it. They don't have to be. Let's say that there's a quotation that no one quotation from the relevant text really captures the label.
Yeah.
Then you would use your own words, maybe, yeah, to.
We have something like "Mom helps the child," and that can cross over stories. And in this case,
yeah,
it shouldn't cross over stories. Repeating that, that's a theme.
Sure.
So there should never be more than one story, I think, in a repeating idea, with the exception of little things that aren't exactly part of the story, like if they then go and wash the utensils. In multiple stories, but that's never like the driving theme of the story.
So everybody okay with that? So let's just plan out. I'm always thinking about the long range. So next week, the 17th, I'm going to have two documents.
Yeah.
From Michelle and you.
Yeah.
Then the 24th, we'll convene and we'll talk about themes.
So we're not being exposed to each other.
No.
We will on the 24th.
No. Next week, this week we're getting the same general thing.
Yes.
And going at it again. So then the following week, we're going to...
The 24th.
Do the 24th would be what we were going to do for this,
yes,
week, which is cut down into themes. On the 24th, then we start. Wait a minute. So everyone will make themes over that week. So we'll have two sets, which will go to you, and you'll have the master theme list.
Well, the master repeating idea.